my boss was away on maternity leave, and I all of a sudden I was doing like different jobs. Mm-hmm. I was like the everything, and I loved the dog because it was a learning experience. And so I was a producer for the website, and I was in charge of hiring all the talents that we were using every week. And as she was out, I decided to just integrate, have more of our diverse talents, if I would say, because there was none. And when she came back, people were complaining, and they were just saying that I did my Benetton. I did my Benetton face, or I did my Benetton, like, and they went back to whatever it was before, slowly. And then there were complaints that basically the photographer couldn't shoot at very dark skin models on a dark skin dress. And to me, it wasn't. Yeah, they don't know how to light the dark. Exactly. They can do it easily on a white face, white skin. But in the dark, it required more of a technical skill. And a lot of photographers, unfortunately, do not have technical skills. They think that's, especially now with the iPhone, that anybody can take a picture, everybody can be a photographer, and that's a problem.
Welcome to First Gens. This is a podcast about first-generation Americans and filling in the blanks beside the hyphen. I'm here. I'm Preen, by the way, in case you forgot my voice. Hopefully you did not. But I'm here for a bonus episode, a very special episode with one of my favorite people who is beyond talented, one of the most creative people I know. And I'm just so happy to know her, to work with her, and it's an honor to be a friend of hers. And so we're here today to talk about representation. We're here to talk about diversity in the workplace, but also diversity just within the retail industry and more. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to my friend, Miss Sylvia.
Hi. First of all, I want to say that it's an honor to have you as a friend. What? And I have a mutual respect. You're very, very, very talented as well. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, friend. This is so like overdue. So Sylvia, can you tell everyone a little bit about growing up, about how you became like involved in the arts and just like your creative journey?
Well, I grew up in Italy, so art is part of my culture. So I grew up surrounded by beautiful things all the time. So for me, it was like normal. And I study art, and I decided to move to the new world. And it was big of a cultural shock, but it was beautiful. I lived in Palm Springs for 8 months. That's where I learned English. And then I moved to New York, and I stayed in New York City for many years. And then I moved to Boston for 2 years. And then I came to Charlotte two years ago.
Wow. Okay, yes. So how was your transition here to the South? Like,
bumpy. I mean, yeah. It's like, well, I'm a foreigner. I'm an Italian American now, officially. So I have my citizenship. So I came a little late. Like, I grew up in Italy, but I'm a foreigner. I'm a foreigner, and no matter what. But in the South, I feel more so, because compared to New York or even Boston, there are certain things that almost, I don't want to say don't exist, because there is racism is everywhere nowadays, unfortunately, not just in the US, but everywhere in the world. If you're from a different group, ethnic group, or a different religion, or different, like, if you're just different sometimes, it's just been enough for somebody else to hate you. But here, I feel that it's segregation, it's a little bit like, it's still a little bit there. It's not, integration is not 100% there. It's changing. I can see it with the new generation. This is, Charlotte is a beautiful city, it's a very millennial, and it's a very banking city, it's not creative city. Right. But it has a lot of, like, I can see diversity in general. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't see inclusiveness as much.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, like, so common. Like, you know, we have this podcast, and we talk to so many first gens, and it's so funny because a lot of them moved from other places, right? They are from Miami, or they're from, you know, New York, typically, right? And it's often that when we do our stories and our interviews here for this podcast, that so many people talk about how hard that, like, transition to the South was, and how different it was, and how I think racism was a little bit more, like, apparent and a little bit more obvious. And so, like, just for you, so you are the mother of a first gen.
Yes.
And so I've taken a liking to your son, Carlo. I think he's awesome. And
thank you.
I just hope to spend more time with him.
He's very sweet.
Yes, he is. And so, like, can you tell us a little bit about Carlo and just, like, raising him and just how, you know, how that transition that you made was impactful for both of you?
It was tough. And raising him, I raised him as a single parent, and he's biracial. In New York, it was at time not easy. I have people call me, like, I mean, for me, raising Carlo was not easy. Sometimes I have people, like, asking me if he was my adopted son, or if, I have an Indian woman one time on a bus saying that she wishes he looked more like me because he has more of a, I'm very white. I'm, like, super cheese white, and he's tan and he has a beautiful color, but yeah. For me, I didn't even see that, and I didn't even think it was an issue. But I know right. That in India there is caste, there is a whole mm-hmm. issue with the color and caste, and my grandmother's sister lived in India for 15 years from Germany, and they knew all of that. Yeah. And everybody knows that the caste system is just money, but also color. Yeah. The lighter you are, the better you are, in a way. So It was not that difficult. I mean, it was upsetting yeah. to have adults from a different race make derogatory comments about me and my son. That was hurting me. I wasn't hurting him because he was not old enough to understand that. Mm-hmm. As he get older, it was. I don't want to say it was okay, but I didn't have, or maybe didn't pay attention to these comments. And we moved to Boston, and in Boston it was. I had to say it was fine. The school was diverse, yeah. not super diverse, but it was diverse enough. Mm-hmm. And for him, it was enough that he had opportunity to meet. Because it was an international school, mm-hmm. kids from different countries, different yeah. cultures, and different types. Like, he has a Japanese friend, or he has a friend from Africa, and then he has a friend from France, and then, you know, all that different culture. Yeah. And that's what is important for me right. as a mother of a biracial child. And even if he was white, it doesn't matter. What yeah. it matters is, like, a child that grew up in the world in 2019. Mm-hmm. Understand that this is diverse world, and accept other culture, and accept those culture for what they are, and yeah. does not impose his own point of view, mm-hmm. try to regulate those yeah. cultures, because that's to me is wrong. It's hard for people sometimes to put themselves into somebody else's shoes.
Right.
Imagine how hard it is to put your feet in somebody else's shoes. Cultural shoes,
right,
like
right.
habits and way that you grow up, and like little nuances. Like, people have ideas of what Italy is, or what France it is, but it's all yeah. sometimes stereotyped. They think we are all about pasta and pizza,
right.
but it's actually there's more to that. Italian mm-hmm. food is way diverse than people think it is,
right.
but there is, like, people don't want to see it, or mm-hmm. they can't see it, or they don't care to see it. And
yeah.
the same thing goes for culture.
Yeah, that's so true. So, like, what has been, like, I think the most important, like, value, I would say, that you've instilled into Carlo?
To accept people for who they are, and not mm-hmm. to make judgment based on diversity.
Yeah.
Based on, like, if somebody looks different than you
yeah.
or behave in a different way, it doesn't mean that they're bad.
Right.
It means that they have a different way of living their life. And
yeah.
then it's, if you understand that diversity, it will make you an amazing person. Yes. Because that's why I want Carlo to be like more of a child of the future, child of the world that is changing and becomes more global.
Yes.
Globalization. Global to me means accepting other culture, not being so much of a nationalistic and so much closed, close into your own, into yourself. I mean, it's good to me to keep your culture, to keep your background, to keep where you're coming from.
Yep.
But at the same time, you should be able to be flexible enough to open up to other cultures. I don't want to say that you have to completely forget who you are. And I don't forget that I'm Italian. I'm actually Italian, French and German.
Yeah.
So I don't forget that. I will never. But at the same time, I'm trying to be flexible and accepting people for who they are without judging them with my point of view that comes from who I am with my background and my like already set ideas. And you know, I don't want to do that, and I don't want Carlo to do that either.
Yeah.
And I hope he won't. It's unfortunate that somehow, because he's so young, that he will be pushed into that. And even I see that since we moved, that he sees that diversity, he sees that this place is not very integrated, there is racism still on, and there is segregation, and I can see that he's having a lot of like a hard time and accepting who he is and bouncing back and forth and try to make sense of all of it,
but also realizing he does not have to choose. Like, I think that is like the biggest thing that is important to tell any first gen, but I think especially those who are multiracial, that you don't have to choose. You know, you are who you are, and it's good to embrace that.
Yeah, it is sad because sometimes the cultures are pushing you one way or another. Like here, his like other side, the other family are just one way. There's no integration in that side, and Carlo noticed that since he was very young.
Yeah.
And I don't condemn. I don't say that it's not nice that they haven't invited me since we're so close, integrate me into their family, because at the end of the day, I'm the ex-wife, you know, so I understand that and I respect that, but I can see from the eyes of Carlo that there is an issue that he sees. He's the one who brought it up to me. He noticed that there is that division, and unfortunately it's still happening. So that division make the kids of the product of this division, it's like they make them questions, and they're like, why is that and he's not the other? Like, I have a very diverse group of friends, and I never even say, oh, this is Asian, this is not, this is I just have friends, my are friends.
Yes.
I don't say this is, it doesn't matter to me. But you know, when you are in a place where you are pointed and you're like, oh, you are this, you are that, then you make it an issue, and it shouldn't be. That's all.
That's so true. That's so true. Okay, so what Sylvia was mentioning before, just about perspectives and like not judging people, like how they look, and I think similarities, differences, etc. Sylvia and I, if you looked at us, like we may not look like we have anything in common, just because you might look at us on the surface. However, Sylvia is someone who I share more in common with, you know, like in my workplace than like 90% of the people, for multiple reasons. And I think that, again, that's just very important to point out, is just diversity in all forms and in all perspectives, in all different kinds of backgrounds. So, Sylvia, like diversity, why do you think that it's important within like the retail space?
Because for a very long time it wasn't even taken into consideration. Like years ago, I remember back in New York, I was working for this big high-end fashion retail store, and my boss was away on maternity leave, and I was doing like different jobs. I was like
everything.
And I loved it all, because it was a learning experience. And so I was a producer for the website, and I was in charge of hiring all the talents that we were using every week. And as she was out, I decided to just integrate, have more of a diverse talents, if I would say, because there was none. And when she came back, people were complaining and they were just saying that I did my Benetton. I did my Benetton face, or I did my Benetton. Like, and they went back to whatever it was before, slowly. And then there were complaints that basically the photographer couldn't shoot at very dark skin models on a dark skin dress. And to
not
me, it wasn't
how to light dark skin people.
They don't know how to light the dark. Exactly. They can do it easily on a white face, white by skin. But in the dark, it required more of a technical skill. And a lot of photographers, unfortunately, do not have technical skills. They think that's, especially now with the iPhone, that anybody can take a picture, everybody can be a photographer. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
Because you see a lot of like images of people of colors where the skin looks very flat.
Yes.
There is no like highlights. Yes. And that is because, unfortunately, the photographer doesn't know what they're doing and he's doing what she's doing.
Right.
And that could be an issue. But yes, I was called the Benetton person because I'm Italian and because, you know, it was a thing. And then they went back to basically shoot the same holes.
That's so ridiculous. And just for clarity, so Benetton is the United Colors of Benetton, a huge brand from, well, it was very, very big in the 80s. If people do not know the United Colors of Benetton, but all of like their promotions, their campaigns are very like of the world and very like globally inclusive. Like they have someone from multiple like ethnicities and backgrounds, etc., in like all of their promotional items. So that is the United Colors of Benetton. But that is what Sylvia's just attempt to bring in diversity within the company she was working in. They made fun of her.
And it was funny because years after, Franca Sozzani had that whole issue of Vogue with the black models and everybody like applauded. And it was like, okay, I am so happy about that, but it shouldn't be like, oh my God, well, we having like a different culture, a different skin color on our magazine, and it shouldn't be an issue. It shouldn't be like, it's unfortunate that it's making a big deal. And I do hope that the usage of darker skin color models right now is not going to be just a fade that is going to stay for a little bit, because shooting a black person is cool. I hope it's going to be more of, let's take the models because it looks the way that we want to look beside the skin color.
Right. It's not a trend.
No, I hope.
Yeah.
Because now you have all of this streetwear that is expensive, which means that it's not streetwear anymore, because streetwear is supposed to be cheap, you know, like you imitating high-end fashion in a cheap way. And now it's like you have Louis Vuitton and you have other brands that they are doing the streetwear for like a lot of money. So I don't know. It's all like...
Yeah, but you really said something very important. You know, it's just hoping that right now it's not something that is not a trend. You know, it's going to last within the industry.
It's, again, using black for what you want it and discard it when it's not going to be useful anymore. I hope it's not just going to be a trend. I hope, you know, who knows what will happen in the future. It's obviously a good thing that finally you can see more diversity in fashion.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Time will tell, I guess.
Yeah. So specifically, like, I know we've talked about like just being inclusive, like period, and like what that means. But with colorism, right, so this season with First Gens, we're talking about colorism, and we're talking about how basically a lot of people, darker skinned people, are oppressed and are treated differently because of the darker skin,
the history
tone.
I mean, I know the history of it. I mean, in the States, I don't know about in Africa, but here it is like crazy, because I have a lot of black friends, like I said. So I know the different, the color from like high yellow.
Right, what you were saying before. So like, when you say high, well, just to clear this up for our listeners, right? So a very light-skinned
black
woman who could be biracial or is just very fair.
My
like,
son
very
is high yellow. It's a little lighter than high yellow, but that's what it is. It's like a beige. It's like a They have other names, but some of the names that might be offensive for people that they be used somewhere else. But yeah, it's almost like a light brown color, right. Like a really light color, like tint. Oh.
So why do you think it's been so much harder for dark skinned women? Like you were saying, like in your mood board, like you had, you know, women that look like Lupita and all these different darker skinned women like that you wanted to feature. Why do you think it's why has it taken so long? And why do you think dark skinned women are still not just integrated within the beauty standard?
It started with the high fashion because Yves Saint Laurent in the 70s and 80s started to integrate more of a diversity and very dark skin color woman. I think it's like high fashion, high luxury fashion is usually more like a forward thinking for certain things. Mm-hmm. And I think here, I don't know, in the States, there is like this again, the darker skin people were supposed to be in the field and the high yellow people were in the house. Mm-hmm. And there is even like putting within the black community, putting them against each other to fight. Mm-hmm. So the very dark black person hates the very light and vice versa. Right. And because of those reasons, so instead of like having people accepting who they are, they had to fight within their race. And it's so silly. But then for white people, maybe they understand that and they use that against the black people. So then the more like they want to be politically correct by maybe using a nice high yellow model because they feel like, okay, I did my black thing and now hiring the very dark skin color. Yes. I don't know. I can't get into the mind of people. For me, it doesn't make any sense because I don't think that way. Right. I can't justify or say why somebody else will think differently than I do. Yeah. I don't know why the reasoning is, but mine, it doesn't make any sense to me. Not now.
So what frustrations have you ran into in the industry?
But to try to push for diversity, even Asian models. Oh, my God, that's the hardest part because, oh, this is not right. This is all this is that. It's like it's Asian. Like in within Asian cultures, you get different race too. Yeah. You get Chinese, you get Japanese, you get Korean, you get Filipino. You get like it can go on and on and on. So people from Mongolia, people from
India.
Yeah. So it's just not, I feel like, I don't know, I feel the U.S. needs to be a little bit more open-minded. Yeah. There is not much, depends on where you are, obviously, that this world is made of people who can look completely different. Asian doesn't mean Chinese.
Right.
Only.
Right.
Black doesn't mean African. Oh, white doesn't mean just European.
Right.
I mean, Latino doesn't like mean South America.
Right.
It's very silly that the people try to just combine, like, simplify
they just try to
something that
off.
Is so complex.
Yeah.
And so they like is almost like not paying attention to the diverse world that we're living right
That's now. That's so true. So like even, you know, this season we've had various roundtable discussions about colorism and they've all been organized by geographical region. So we've had our African roundtable and we've had a series of people from different countries, as well as the West Indies, the Caribbean, as well as Southeast Asia. So like India, Pakistan.
Yes.
But we're going to have an East Asian roundtable. That's our next one. And we had someone who is Vietnamese, someone who's Filipino, someone who is Korean,
as well as
someone who's Chinese.
Very different.
Oh, yes. And that's that was very important, you know, for me when, you know, figuring out who was a part of that roundtable and to really have that representation. Because like you said, it's very frustrating and it ends up giving a very one-sided, small perspective to other people who aren't of that culture, because like, well, of both ways. So people who aren't of that culture see like maybe solely a Chinese family represented and are just like, okay, like, and that's like the only skim of East Asia that they
and it's silly because it's like so the culture is so different from China to Japan even to Korea and they've been fighting, there will be war between the countries too. So it's like, or for a Filipino, it doesn't look like a Chinese,
right? So it's just important for those people of those cultures to see themselves, and it's important to be able to showcase that diversity within that continent, you know, period. So I just, again, friend, like, I just applaud you. I give kudos to you because, like, Sylvia is the pure definition of an ally. Okay. I tell, like, all the Black people at my job. I tell all the white people, like, I tell everyone, because Sylvia's perspective and her ability to, like, inclusivity isn't something that she tries to do or tries to be. It's just what she does and who she is. And I just feel like we just need more of that in all of our workspaces, but specifically in the retail space as well, because honestly, like, people just, they need to see themselves.
Well, sometimes I feel like if I go to a Black person, I start to talk, they look at me, it's like, why are you here? You shouldn't talk to me. I'm like, I'm sorry. I mean, I want to just say hi. Right. It's something that is culturally here. It's so embedded.
Yeah.
I could see it. That is not, is maybe changing with the new generation. Like even my son, and he's 12.
Yeah.
Even maybe kids in the 20s, I see that there is more integration.
Yeah.
But it's a slow process.
It's very slow.
I think it's a very slow process. I hope that there will be more inclusion and representation, for sure. I hope that in these very crazy times of a lot of xenophobia and a lot of, like, racism everywhere, not just in the U.S. It's just something that is, you can see it on the news, and unfortunate, that eventually it will dissipate. I hope that people will understand that there is no point, really. I mean, there is no point to hate somebody else just because they're different than you. I hope that will end. But it can only happen if the new generation are taught to be more accepting of other cultures, like what I'm trying to do with Carlo, and I hope other people will do the same with their kids. I see that the new generation are brushing off a little bit of what the old generation had. Mm-hmm. I feel like sometimes it depends on where you are. In a specific country, you might have a harder time. And I think maybe in the South, it might take a little bit more time. The time that we are right now, everywhere from Europe, everywhere in the world, really, there is like racial tensions. If you're Jewish, or if you're Black, or if you're Asian, like if you're different, you are treated in a different way. And just I feel like now is worse than ever. So it's also an issue that people are very aware of it. And it's unfortunate. I hope it will go away, and it will be, because it's only create problems, and we don't need that.
Don't need any more problems.
No, I mean, what we for don't. Though? Like, I don't understand the point to go through that. I really don't. To me, it makes no sense, because we already went to a Second World War. We went through a lot of bad things. We went to genocides in Africa and everywhere else in Europe. Like, we are well aware of things that happen.
Yes.
Because it happens so often, I feel like sometimes people get desensitized, and they're not, like, the shootings that happen also, as they happen more often, people are just, okay, another news. But they're very unfortunate, because there are things that happen that can shake and change our life forever, and they shouldn't, you know. I hope the world will be a better place eventually, and people will be more accepting of themselves and others as well.
Well, thank you so much, Sylvia.
I appreciate you. Thank
you so much, friend.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcast. It helps other people find us and truly, truly makes a huge impact on the success of this podcast. We can also be found on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and truly anywhere else you get your podcast. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FirstGens. That's the number one, STGENS. Plus, get tons of bonus content on our website, firstgenspodcast.com. First Gens was created by me, Perrine DeShield, and is co-hosted by my lovely and talented cousin, Sky Wilson, and I. Our musical composer is the wonderful and talented Nick Stubblefield. A huge thank you to our special guest for sharing their First Gens experience today. First Gens is a proud member of Huga, a co-working space based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you so much for all of your love and support.